your frame of reference that you're choosing to help people understand better as a Pokemon, I'll accept that, actually. Welcome to Super True Stories. We suffer through and report back on the worst and weirdest documentaries you can stream. I'm Dave Hunt.
And I'm Jamie Hunt. And I feel like the makers of this film need some help with naming things.
Yeah?
This week we watched The World's Largest Ball of Twine. That's the name of the documentary.
You wanted like Twine Wars.
Right. Like something more creative than just World's Largest Ball of Twine.
It certainly isn't at all sensationalized, is it?
But it's fitting, because this is a Midwestern movie, and that is a very Midwestern title. The premise of this documentary is that there are three balls of twine that are vying for recognition as the largest ball in the world. There's nothing about the title that tells you about the drama and the, I don't know another word for drama.
The angst.
The drama and the angst that go into this battle over the world's largest ball of twine title. It's just world's largest ball of twine.
Well, there is not that much drama.
Maybe the movie's title is really a commentary on just how nice all the people are in this documentary.
That could be. We have some characters, but you're right. Everyone is pretty benign in this documentary.
I would suggest to you a better title might have been Battle of the Balls.
Who's got the biggest balls?
We've set up the premise for this. There are three balls of twine vying for the title World's Largest Ball of Twine. But vying is just way too strong a word for what they're doing. They're existing with balls of twine and are mildly curious about which one is going to be deemed the biggest.
I think part of the problem is that there's no good way to say this. These balls are so big that it's almost like 6 months later, this other ball got a little bit bigger than the other one.
It's a third of an inch larger now.
When they introduce the three balls, one they call the string ball, and they say that's 42 feet in diameter. And then there's the ball of twine, which they say is almost 8 million feet of twine. And then they say that the twine ball is 17,400 pounds. So, like, why are you using different metrics to define the size of these balls?
I couldn't begin to answer that.
I also was distracted by the strange competitive rap music that's playing during the beginning.
Yeah, it doesn't really fit with the vibe. We're introduced to the largest ball of twine that has ever been balled by a single person. And that is in Darwin, Minnesota, our home state.
It sure is.
We're introduced to sort of a cast of characters in Darwin, which is a town of 252 souls. And they have this ball of twine that was built by Francis Johnson. He is dead at the time of this filming, but he has created this ball over the course of 29 years.
He is gone, but we get to meet Roger Werner, who is the twine ball caretaker. Roger says,
"As you can see, it is round. The only one of the twine balls in competition that is. We're proud of that fact."
Wait a minute. The others aren't round? Can't call it a ball if it's not round.
Right. But we have not seen the other balls yet. We're going to say balls so many times.
So many balls. Another person who we meet is Edward Mayer from Ripley's Museums of Ripley's Believe It or Not fame. And he ends up being a critical player in all of this because Ripley's is interested in getting one of these balls into their collection.
And that's his whole job. His whole job is procuring things for Ripley's Believe It or Not.
It's probably a fun job.
In most cases. If you're like collecting like the world's largest elephant dung, probably not that great. But if you're like hunting down things like the largest ball of twine, that's pretty cool. And I did not know this. Is Ripley's based in Canada? Because that's where this guy is from.
There's at least an office in Toronto that he maybe is based out of. And he's Canadian. He says that one of the first things that he noticed after moving to Florida is that in America, bigger is better.
And in the Midwest, we grow them big.
Yes.
We're a hale and hearty lot.
Yes. Well, it's all that Viking blood.
I guess. They introduced this ball that was created by Francis by showing us some tourist reactions to it.
Yes.
We're introduced to three young women who are checking off the bucket list for a woman who's entering the Air Force. This was like one thing that she wanted to do. It was her 21st birthday. And rather than go to Applebee's and order a daiquiri, she wanted to go look at the largest ball of twine.
I think it was motivating her. Like, this is what I'm going into the military to protect.
I like that. And they're like super excited because it's free to look at the ball of twine.
As it should be. The documentarians then cut to pictures of two large women. And we get this little story that Roger tells.
Two gals came in and I really appreciated when they asked to have their picture with me. And they were from Big Girl, Big Stuff travel group. So we cuddled in the doorway of the twine ball. And they were both larger than me. And I thought, boy, is this great.
When we first moved south, I remember the first time I went back to Minnesota, I was like, we're at least 20% bigger. And not necessarily fatter, but like taller and broader and healthier.
Healthier?
That's all the corn.
Makes us strong.
I guess. Okay, so this next part I actually found really interesting. We're talking about the olden days now because Francis was born in like 1904. So in the olden days, the post office was not permitted to throw away string. So they basically had to create string balls. And it became like a point of pride for a post office to have a string ball.
And it could get to be like several feet and several hundred pounds. Francis, like a lot of people, grew up in the Depression where they had this value that they couldn't throw anything away. They shouldn't be wasting things. That kind of inspired him to begin creating his ball of twine the first week in March of 1950.
Yes. It only took him 8 years before that ball was big enough that he got national fame for it. Because in 1958, he was asked if he wanted to bring his ball of twine to New York City to be on I've Got a Secret, which is perhaps the very lamest game show I have ever seen.
Yeah, we get to see a little bit of footage of it. It's a panel of four celebrities. And they do a 20 questions sort of thing to try to get to the heart of what secret is that they're hiding. And he comes out onto the stage pulling this string.
Which doesn't tip them off.
No, they're not able to guess it.
When the people don't guess what it is and they like open the curtains to reveal it, the audience is like, oh my God.
Can you open the curtains, fellas?
Entertainment has come a long way in the past, what, 65 years or so?
I think people reacted less to the latest Avengers movie in the theater on opening day. But they say that at the time, the twine ball string was so long that it would have reached from New York City to Panama City, Florida.
That's insane. And that's only 8 years of twine collecting.
Mm-hmm.
So Ripley's, believe it or not, gets it on their radar at that point. And we learn this man spent between 4 and 6 hours a day, every single day, balling, stringing, creating this twine ball.
It's a lot of time.
Yeah.
It sounds like he was quite a character.
Yes.
There's family who don't exactly seem to love their memories of him. One of them says he didn't have a wife or kids, so the twine ball was his baby.
But honestly, this person has left a footprint on Darwin, because they still have Darwin Twine Ball Days, which is a whole day dedicated to, I guess, the worship of this twine ball.
Yes, they gather around and don pagan robes. And No, no, it's Minnesota. They wouldn't do that. They have a parade and eat some hot dish and look at the twine.
Right. Some spectator at Twine Ball Days says that the twine ball put Darwin on the map.
I agree with them because there are 252 people that live there and there's no way you would have heard of Darwin without this twine ball.
I suppose. They show this woman who's being interviewed and she says her daughter is so in love with the twine ball that she's going to give away twine balls as the party favor at her wedding.
They call them a miniature world's largest ball of twine, which as you might expect is just a small ball of twine.
The miniature world's largest ball of twine is the most small town Minnesota thing I have ever seen.
Yes. And they're being bought up, I'm sure, because you got to have a souvenir.
Right.
Francis collected lots of other things too.
Mm.
So if you're driving by and you see this twine ball and you get lured in, there is no quick visit to Francis and the twine ball. He's got 5,500 wrenches, 700 jacks, 400 hammers. Edward says that people who are collectors have brain cells that are different.
One of his weird collections was nail aprons. I feel like you don't just collect 400 nail aprons over the course of a lifetime. Like, I feel like you had to be seeking them up. What is a nail apron?
An apron for nails?
I don't know. We also learn in this segment that Weird Al Yankovic did a song about the ball of twine in Darwin.
It's kind of a grand epic poem.
Yes.
Set to music about the ball of twine.
He was enamored with it. I, in sixth grade, had a math or science teacher who was Weird Al Yankovic's cousin, and he looked pretty much exactly like him, except his hair was short.
Did he sing?
You know, he would do like weird acting out of things, so definitely weirdness was in the gene pool.
Do you remember his first name?
I don't. Mr.? His name was Mr.
Weird Mr. Yankovic?
Right.
Well, that brings us to ball two. This ball was created by a man named Frank Stober, and he began in 1953, so 3 years after Francis started his. But it began when Frank needed to have surgery, and his doctor told Frank that Frank needed to lose weight, so he started rolling twine in a ball.
Right.
Did Frank need to lose like 3/4 of a pound? How are you losing weight by winding a ball?
And did he need to lose it in his fingers specifically?
He had fat fingertips.
Right. Do you have a sedentary lifestyle? Well, no, I roll balls of twine in my hands.
I play video games, so my fingers are very fit.
Right. And apparently he enjoyed doing it.
We learn one of the distinguishing things about Frank's ball. Frank was not creating his ball all on his own.
Mm-mm.
He was using the help of friends and neighbors, and he was collecting twine from his neighbors. And he actually kept a ledger. So he has this notebook that lasts for decades.
It's amazing.
Of all these lengths of twine that he got and who gave it to him.
And the date on which he got them.
Yep.
It is an amazing artifact.
My grandpa kept strange diaries and journals of things. The days that were like all this stuff to me seemed to happen, I would like sneak and look at his journal and it would be like the number of strawberries that he picked that was in there.
This guy's whole family is like didn't record the dates of his children's births or any of that, but how much twine he got from his neighbor Lewis, that made it in.
Mm-hmm. We learn that Frank caught up to Francis after 16 years. So in 1968, they both had the same size balls.
There's a lot of movement of the balls then at this point. The balls are outgrowing the
sack.
The storage space that exists for the balls at these individual men's homes. So they have to find alternate locations for both of these balls to be stored.
The city is very excited to take Frank's ball. They realize that this could be an attraction for the city, so they move it into the middle of town. But Frank sadly died in 1974.
Yep.
And Francis was able to keep rolling his until 1979. So Francis has the biggest ball, and it's in the Guinness Book of World Records for 24 years as the title holder.
Yep. He lives for 10 more years. I don't know if, like, after Frank was gone, he wasn't motivated anymore, but he just sort of stops.
We get a little footage of him.
I feel bad that I can't continue. So I might have made it bigger, but then I made the world with it. And then I thought if somebody else wanted to make it bigger, and they're welcome to it.
So he doesn't even seem that enthralled with having the record.
He was on TV. What more does he need?
We next get quite a bit about the ball in Cawker City, Kansas. They decide, actually, maybe we do want to make the biggest ball of twine. So they all get together and the city decides we're going to make this thing bigger. Here's where I have issues.
Uh-huh.
They start going to the co-op and getting giant spools of new twine. And then they just go unspool the new twine around the giant ball in the middle of town.
Yep.
First of all, the ball's not round. The ball is not a sphere. It's not a globe.
It's rounded at the top, but it's squared off on the bottom. So it's more like a diglet.
Diglet.
A diglet?
Yeah.
Your frame of reference that you're choosing to help people understand better is a Pokemon. I'll accept that, actually.
Right. So it's a diglet.
Diglet.
But Frank's ball is a Pokeball.
Okay.
So if you just use that as your frame of reference for how you picture these two balls, or I'm sorry, this one ball and this one diglet.
Diglet.
You are set.
I mean, it's a fat diglet.
Oh, yes. It's chonky.
It's a chunky diglet?
Yes, it's chonky.
It's like a wheel of cheese.
Look. Why do you have to improve upon diglet? It's a chonky diglet.
Okay, it's a chonky diglet.
Yes, it's a little thick.
So the Cawker City ball is not a ball, and it's being somewhat questionably grown in size.
They have a twine-a-thon once a year on the third Saturday in August, where they wind twine around this twine diglet.
All night.
All night, yep. And then also when tourists visit, they're permitted to wind twine around the diglet.
Yes, they say that the ball of twine is everyone's ball of twine. And one tourist particularly fascinated with this is Ken Pavlovsky, who lives in Chicago and decided he needed a break from the city to go and stare at this large ball of twine and reconnect with Middle America. And also 9/11
right.
Is a big part of this segment.
There's like a whole side plot of 9/11 in this.
9/11 changed us, and now more than ever, we need twine balls, I guess.
Right. And people here have old-fashioned American values. I don't recall any old-fashioned American values around twine.
Let me tell you about old-fashioned American values.
Uh-huh.
They're defined by local students trying to set the ball on fire.
Right?
Those two things happen on top of each other in this documentary. 9/11, 9/11, America, Middle America, less city, more Middle America. Values, values, values. Oh, our jerk-off kids tried to set it on fire.
And we haven't mentioned before Linda. Earlier, when we're introduced to her, she says that this is a tourist attraction for the town. And that at one point, it was recognized on like the top 10 roadside attractions. And she lists other things. And what jumped out at me was Lizzie Borden's house.
We're right up there with Lizzie Borden's home, the Cadillac Ranch. Lots of fun places.
Fun places like the place where a bunch of people were murdered? Okay, cool. But so she forgives those darned kids.
I like Linda because she says, unlike in Darwin, where they have enclosed their twine ball in a glass gazebo that no one can touch, apparently it's even hard to kind of see into.
Right. They talk about having to like peer in with your hands on the glass.
Yeah. She says that doing that and closing it and protecting it that way in Cawker City would lose the point of what it is.
I don't want anyone to feel like they're not important enough to have a part in our ball of twine.
That's kind of touching.
It is kind of touching. I kind of like this woman, even though it's not a ball.
It's a diglet.
Diglet.
She says that they have 150 to 200 people a day in the summer visiting the ball of twine. And they have a map that shows all over the world people are coming to look at this ball of twine. Can you imagine coming from like Sri Lanka to Cawker City, Kansas, to look at a diglet of twine?
It's cute that you go to the specificity of this particular city in Kansas. Can you imagine living in Australia and coming to Kansas, period?
Full stop. But you're not going to the Grand Canyon, not Yosemite National Park. You're going to Kansas, which Linda does take great lengths to describe as the heart of America.
Oh, it's the something of America. We next meet Lottie. She's the woman who runs the gift shop in Cawker City for the twine ball. And she says that once upon a time, a woman from London? What are you doing? A woman from London, like England, not London, Kansas. A woman from London, England was in town looking for souvenirs and was quite upset that they didn't have any. So Lottie took a ping pong ball, soaked it in glue, wrapped it in twine, and then glued it onto a fossil rock that she goes and collects. And now they have some souvenirs that you can get when you're in town.
I love that it's not a miniature ball of twine. It's actually just twine glued to a ping pong ball.
I suppose it's less work.
Which is sort of the problem with the ball of twine in this town, which is that it is less work because you have literally hundreds of people working on it.
Exactly.
Cheating. Then we're introduced to Cher Olson, who is an artist who lives and works across from the twine ball. And she starts out her obsession with the twine ball by painting the twine ball into her paintings. Like, here's a landscape with the twine ball in it.
Yes, and there are a bunch of boarded up, closed down, decrepit buildings in town, because God bless small town America.
Right.
And they decide that one of the ways that they can spruce them up, and this is a cool idea, is to do a bunch of paintings and artwork to put in the windows. And so she takes famous artwork and then twinifies them. Or diglettizes them.
Diglettizes. Well, it's still twine. Twine's okay. She's not balletizing it.
Okay. She twines them up. She's got like a painting of, you know, Andy Warhol's soup can, but it's got a twine ball on it instead of a tomato. But Cher, despite being the pastor's wife, creates huge controversy when she paints a statue of David with a big ball of twine where his big balls would have been. And people are so incensed that she has to take it down. So once again, there's your small town, middle America, heartland values.
Right. She's had offers from many people to purchase this David, but it's not for sale because her husband, the minister, really wants the painting.
I suspect that he's being a supportive husband more than anything else.
Because it's not that great.
None of this is exactly art, but it's cute and clever.
It makes me really miss small town Midwest.
Yeah. Well, as the ball's reputation grew, the rumors flew.
Uh-huh.
And the townsfolk say that Ripley's Museum wanted to buy the ball. And we cut to Edward, who says,
I never respected the Cawker City ball because it just, to me, was a wannabe, you know, a whole town doing something. It's cute and it's middle America, but it doesn't have passion.
And here we learn that when Francis was rolling his ball for 29 years up in Darwin, Minnesota, Francis was also inhaling chemicals and fibers from the twine that resulted in his death.
I mean, he was 84 at the time of his death. So we're not talking about like he was 53 or something like that.
No, but he developed emphysema from, they suspect, extreme exposure to twine.
Yeah. And that's unfortunate.
After his death, it's Harlan who gets to decide what happens to this ball. And he offers it to the community club and they move it to the gazebo thing that it's in now. But Edward wants this ball.
It is the Holy Grail.
They set up a town meeting, and he says he does a low-budget dog and pony show to try to convince them that they should let him buy the ball of string.
I literally was ran out of town, okay? It was the ugliest day of my life.
And the people in the town that are interviewed about this are not pretending like they didn't run him out of town. They're like, oh yeah, we boot him out of here.
Yeah, there's no chance of getting this ball out of Darwin. And Harlan says that he didn't really realize until then that the town cared that much about it. But now he realizes it's a symbol of a new era in Darwin.
And Edward's bitter.
Edward has massive sour grapes.
Yeah, he leaves town with a chip on his shoulder and rage against the Darwinians.
And he ends up having opportunity for revenge because he learns that there's another ball of twine.
Ball three.
Ball number three was created by J.C. Payne, a rancher in Texas. And Edward says that it was totally out of spite that he got back to Toronto from this failed trip to Minnesota and said he's going to buy this ball of string.
Yep. And this ball of string is inferior in every way to both of the other balls, honestly.
It really is. It's made from plastic-colored nylon and not real twine.
Right. He's only creating this ball for this record. It's not like Francis's ball, where he built this ball over the course of his lifetime. It's not like Frank's ball, where he had the whole community coming together and giving him twine for it. This guy like basically went to the hardware store, bought a bunch of twine, and spun it into a ball.
He also used a machine.
Cheating.
Right. He was able to create this in just a couple years.
Yeah. It's a bunch of bunk.
And Edward is not in love with the ball, but he still really wants a ball because they're building a new museum in Branson.
I feel like Branson is what happens when Midwesterners think they know what Vegas is like, but has never been there.
It's like Vegas without any of the sin, I guess.
Right, because it's the Midwest.
When they get it to Branson, they discover how truly poorly made this thing is. When they got it there and they set it down, the ball basically imploded.
Again, another non-ball. This one just sort of looks like a clump of mashed potatoes.
Yeah, it's like a mound.
Yes, like if you took the scooper out and just plopped the mashed potatoes. I am very defensive of Minnesota's ball, I'm realizing as we have this conversation.
Oh, I am too. And Edward agrees with us.
Yes.
He says that one person building it is his number one criteria. He also liked that the Darwin ball was built off of string that was collected. And of course, the ball that was made the fastest ended up being the ball that was the poorest.
Hmm. Just a commentary on our times.
They try to turn it into that. Harlan says that Francis would have a huge problem with the way we operate in society today.
He had his formative years during the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
So the last thing in Cocker City is Reverend Olson saying that the community revolves around that ball of twine. And it literally does. They're literally walking around the diglet of twine.
Diglet!
Stringing twine around it. And Ripley's does not want this. It doesn't have any interest in it. It thinks it's stupid. Forget about it, Cocker City.
It's funny because tourist Ken from Chicago, Big City Ken, talks about how it's things like this that keep America together. But like, it's the community banding together to do something that has no value.
Mm-hmm. Good job.
And then we get a mid-credit coda where we learn that China is trying to outdo us. Happy ending. God bless America. Oh, but by the way, be worried about the Chinese.
Right. What a story, what a tale.
What did you learn?
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't fucking know either.
I had no idea going into this that there were three things of twine, because again, only one ball, competing for the title World's Largest Ball of Twine. There's so many things out there that you could claim as your thing that you're going to have the record in that you don't need to take something that two other people are doing. These guys spent their entire lives building this ball of twine. I'm from Texas, so I'm going to try to outdo them with my crappy nylon ball. And that's the one that gets the recognition. But I did actually learn a lot about, you know, twine and twine balls during this documentary. It did have the thing that I like in documentaries where you actually do learn something.
Yes. It's definitely not a worst documentary. It's a weirdest.
Yes. And I learned that I'm really nostalgic for small town Minnesota.
Mm.
Those small Midwest towns. It's like super flat. They all look the same. They all have like a main street with a town hall and apparently a ball of twine in them. They're copy pasted all over the Midwest. And we used to go to those and take pictures of this sort of small town Americana. I miss it. And that might be because I've been stuck in this house for now 47 days. You know what would be great? Literally anywhere but my house. Lizzie Borden's house, sign me up. What about you, Dave? What did you learn?
Like you, I did not know before this documentary that there was more than one ball. And I immediately had that, like, fuck every other ball. Minnesota's ball is the only one that counts. And I was really relieved to be proven right.
Yeah.
I also learned something else. So this is outside the documentary, but I was China baited into going to Google because it was like, well, this is like 8 years old now. So did China build a big ball? And not that I am aware of from a brief Google search, but I did discover there is another ball. In 1979, James Frank Cotera started building a giant ball in Wisconsin.
Those cheeseheads.
James Frank Cotera, JFK, for his initials. He also called himself Groundhog because he was born on Groundhog Day. Spent 4 days a week wrapping his twine ball because...
Oh, no.
He received a message from God.
Oh, God.
Yes, that God, who told him to stop drinking too much and turn his life around. And if he did that, God would make him famous as, and this is in quotes, as the world's only real groundhog JFK twine man of the world.
Wow, that's a lot of specificity.
He did briefly have the heaviest ball of twine.
Is it spherical?
No, it looks like a potato. So I guess I learned that these ball of twine guys are all characters.
Yeah, I don't think you start a obsession that you spend 4 to 6 hours a day on for 50 years without having something a little different inside your head.
Agreed.
Speaking of characters, you know, on Twitter, there's a character limit, which makes our handle be Super True Story. But you can go on over there and give us a like or a retweet or a comment. You can go on our Facebook page at Super True Stories, where there isn't that character limitation. And please consider giving us a review. Tell your friends about us. We're really excited because last month we had the most downloads in the history of this podcast, and we would love to make that record again.
Yes, stand up to the coronavirus by downloading our podcast.
Right.
There we go.
Right.
And we should thank our friend Tomb Dragomir for the use of Mexicana Massacre off of his album Instrumental Psycho Synth. And if you're looking for other podcasts to listen to while you're quarantining, check out our friends at 6 Foot Plus and The Projection Booth. And Jamie, this was a fun one. I mean, it wasn't exactly painful to get through. It was just kind of quirky and sweet.
Yeah, it really made me a little homesick and made me think about, you know, there's a lot of really nice people out there.
There are. All right. Well, on that note, until next time, I'm Dave Hunt.
And I'm Jamie Hunt.
Bye-bye.
Bye.